Something else was coming up the aisle. Something big and oblong and wooden and brass-bound. It had hundreds of legs. If it was what it seemed, a walking chest of the kind that appeared in pirate stories, brimful of ill-gotten gold and jewels, then what would have been its lid suddenly gaped open. There were no jewels, but there were lots of big square teeth, white as sycamore, and a pulsating tongue, red as mahogany. An ancient suitcase was coming to eat him. Reinsvand clutched at the unconscious Zweiblumen for what little comfort there was there, and gibbered. He wished fervently that he was somewhere else. There was sudden darkness. There was a brilliant flash. The sudden departure of several quintillion atoms from a universe that they had no right to be in anyway caused a wild imbalance in the harmony of the sun totality, which it tried frantically to retrieve, wiping out a number of sub-realities in the process. Huge surges of raw magic boiled uncontrolled around the very foundations of the multiverse itself, welling up through every crevice into hitherto peaceful dimensions and causing novas, supernovas, stellar collisions, wild flights of geese, and drowning of imaginary continents. Worlds as far away as the other end of time experienced brilliant sunsets of coruscating octarine as highly charged magical particles roared through the atmosphere. In the cometary halo around the fabled ice system of Zeret, a noble comet died as a prince flamed across the sky. All this was, however, lost on Rincewind, as, clutching the inert two-flower around the waist, he plunged towards the disk's sea several hundred feet below. Not even the convulsions of all the dimensions could break the iron law of the conservation of energy, and Reinsvarn's brief journey in the plane had sufficed to carry him several hundred miles horizontally, and 7,000 feet vertically. The word plane flamed and died in Rincewind's mind. Was that a ship down there? The cold waters of the Circle Sea roared up at him and sucked him down into their green, suffocating embrace. A moment later there was another splash as the luggage, still bearing a label carrying the powerful travelling rune TWA, also hit the sea. Later on, they used it as a raft. Close to the edge. It had been a long time in the making. Now it was almost completed, and the slaves hacked away at the last clay remnants of the mantle. Where other slaves were industriously rubbing its metal flanks with silver sand, it was already beginning to gleam in the sun with the silken organic sheen of young bronze. It was still warm, even after a week of cooling in the casting pit. The arch-astronomer of Krull motioned lightly with his hand, and his bearers set the throne down in the shadow of the hull. Like a fish, he thought. A great flying fish. And of what seas? It is indeed magnificent, he whispered. A work of true art. Craft, said the thickest man by his side. The arch-astronomer turned slowly and looked up at the man's impassive face. It isn't particularly hard for a face to look impassive when there are two golden spheres where the eyes should be. They glowed disconcertingly. Craft, indeed, said the astronomer, and smiled. I would imagine that there is no greater craftsman on the entire disk than you, golden eyes. Would I be right? The craftsman paused. His naked body, naked at least were it not for a tool belt, a wrist abacus, and a deep tan, tensing as he considered the implications of this last remark. The golden eyes appeared to be looking into some other world. "The answer is both yes and no," he said at last. Some of the lesser astronomers behind the throne gasped at his lack of etiquette, but the arch-astronomer appeared not to have noticed it. "Continue," he said. "There are some essential skills that I lack. Yet I am Golden Eyes Silverhand Dactylos," said the craftsman. I made the metal warriors that guard the tomb of Pichu. I designed the light dams of the Great Neph. I built the Palace of the Seven Deserts. And yet..." He reached up and tapped one of his eyes, which rang faintly. "When I built the golem army for Pichu, he loaded me down with gold, and then, so that I would create no other work to rival my work for him, he had my eyes put out."
"Wise but cruel," said the arch-astronomer, sympathetically.
"Yeah. So I learned to hear the temper of metals and to see with my fingers. I learned how to distinguish ores by taste and smell. I made